The following podcast is taken from my video blog, which you can find under the same name and the Recruitment Podcast channel on YouTube. Hi, welcome to my latest video podcast, which is you've got your business ready to sell. How do you sell it? I mentioned probably a lot on my podcast that a lot of the people that come to me to set up a recruitment business, their eventual goal is to sell it. I've done quite a bit on that, but the subject I haven't covered is how would you actually sell it when you get to that point? Because it's not as easy as, I don't know, sticking your house with an estate agent or advertising on the internet. It's very complicated because the valuation of a recruitment business is a lot more intricate because you're buying something that has a lot of moving parts, like people that can leave, unlike a house that could fall apart. So it's actually a lot more complicated than people think. But also what I think is lost on a lot of people who have this dream of building a recruitment business is that once you've built a recruitment business, you will find a buyer. Fact. Well, that isn't the case. You need to find somebody who wants to buy your business, which may seem like a stupid thing to say. But why would somebody want to buy your business? Now, unless your business is, for example, £100 million turnover, it might be down to finding the right match. Because if you've got a business that is a huge critical mass, then your market for who's going to buy it is more open to people like venture capitalists, people like that. But if you're looking for more of a trade sale, so you're looking for a recruitment business to buy your business, there's got to be a match, which is why I mentioned before that the saleability of your business will be increased if you are more niche. Because quite often businesses will want to buy a niche rather than trying to move into that area themselves. So the smaller the business, the more you're looking for the perfect buyer. Now, you can sell your business two ways. You can have an unsolicited inquiry about for somebody to buy a business, or you can actually take it to market. And the podcast I'm doing today is about taking it to market. Because the unsolicited one, well, fair enough, you're just going to get one out of the blue. If you get one out of the blue, you still want to get a corporate financier involved who are the people that sell your recruitment business, because they will help you with getting the valuation right. They'll help you with the actual sales process. They are the experts. But also at that point, if you do get an unsolicited offer, what I would suggest you do is you still take it to market anyway to see what the market's going to get for you. But having been through the sales process myself before, I know it was not at all what I expected. It was a fuck's sake harder than I expected. And it was really, really painful. And it can be really stressful as well. So I thought it was worthwhile doing a podcast to explain what's entailed. So initially, what you do is you get your business and you go to what's called a corporate financier. Now, a corporate financier is the chap or lady that will represent your business in the market. They will take it to market and they will try and find would-be buyers. So preferably looking for somebody who knows the recruitment market. What they will do before they take it to market is they do a sort of a forensic search of your business to put together something called an information memorandum. And what that is, that's a detailed report to give to would-be buyers that explain the metrics within your business, how much turnover was like, the profits like, number of staff, key accounts, marketing. It's a fairly thick document that goes to would-be buyers to explain what it is they're buying. Because like I say, it's not like you're buying a house or a car. It's a lot more sophisticated than that. So the corporate financiers will go through your business in great detail and drag all the data that a would-be buyer want to see. Now, the would-be buyers, they are going to be very sophisticated business people. They're going to know what they're looking for. They're going to know what they're talking about. So the corporate financier should be preempting what they're looking for. Now, I've been through the process myself, like I say, of putting together the information memorandum, and it is really painful. It is, they go into so much detail, you think, why do you really know this detail? But it's really, really detailed. And one of the things you can do to make the information memorandum, which is hard to say, gathering process easier, is going back to the beginning, which I've said before in previous cases, is you build your business as if you're going to sell it. So if you do then take it to sale, it's worth more money. And part of what you need for your information memorandum is an awful lot of data. A lot of financial data, a lot of statistics, a lot of ratios, a lot of numbers, because most business owners for buying a recruitment group will buy it by numbers. They'll be interested clearly in things like culture and the personalities, but a lot of what they're buying can be judged with numbers. So it's having those really detailed reports on how the business is ran. And it's building that into the business as you go along rather than trying to do it historically. You'll also find, and certainly I found, is when I was putting together the information memorandum, the questions they ask opened your eyes on things that you should have been measuring and are important. Like, I know, for example, what percentage of your business is with a small number of clients? What is staff attrition? What the exact staff attrition is? Where exactly your business comes from? I forget this. There's an awful lot of questions that they ask you, which helped me understand that, okay, well, maybe I should have known those before at the start of the process, because those particular metrics are things as a business owner you should be measuring anyway. I've done various podcasts on marketing. Some of those are involved as well. Some of them are things like average debtor days, which you should know anyway, but they're more accountancy type stuff. So those are the things that you need to be aware of. So rather than going into too much detail on that, because what I don't want to do is to make this podcast massive, because the subject is massive, but I always try and keep a podcast to a reasonable length, about 15 minutes, because I've found that most people, I think, can get 15 minutes and then switch off a little bit, so I try and keep them short. So with this particular one, it is more of a taster. Also, I do caveat it that what I'm doing is I'm generalising quite a bit, because it depends on the size of the business, depends on the market, depends on what your motives are. There's an awful lot that goes into it, so you're just going to have to bear with me. A lot of this is sort of generalist advice. So anyway, you've gone to your corporate financier, you've got the information random, and then he'll discuss with you what the target markets are, and he'll take them to market. Now, it can be, quite frankly, emails, it can be makes phone calls to people, but he'll take it to would-be buyers. Then he gets to the point where you get some would-be buyers that express to the corporate financier, yes, I'm interested in that business. And they have to sign an NDA to get the information memorandum to then see what the business is. So they look through the information, like, okay, that I'm interested. I want a buyer's meeting. And I've been to these buyer's meetings because I've been through the process. And again, those can be really painful because you are a self-made business owner and you're not used to answering to anybody else. And then you'll sit in front of somebody, or more often than not, people, who will then rip apart your information memorandum, ask you a load of questions, and sometimes it can be quite uncomfortable that you don't feel you should be put under that kind of interview type pressure. But you've got to understand, if these people are part of millions of pounds, they're going to put you through the mill. So you kind of swallow that. And once you've been through that, those buyers meetings, that's when hopefully you're going to get some offers. Now, those will be indicative offers. And also what you've got to steel yourself for is some of them will be, quite frankly, piss take. We had a few of those. And they also can be incredibly varied in the type of offer. Because, again, if you never looked at selling your business before, I don't know a lot about it. It's not like somebody coming along and goes, here's 5 million quid, off you pop. It tends to be, more often than not, you get a chunk up front, and then the rest of it is on stage payments, depending on your business hitting targets, which is called an earnout. The earnout tends to be when you stay within the business during that period to hit those targets. I was fortunate enough that I built the business to the point I didn't need to be there at all and secured the buyout so I could just walk out the door that day. But that's not really that usual. Although what you can do is, if you have been successful with a succession plan, is you get a chunk up front, then you get the stage payments, but you don't actually have to stay in the business. You're more retained as a consultant. So when you get the offers, they'll all be weird and wonderful and you can narrow it down to which business you want to talk to. This is again where your corporate financier gets involved, and this is where you narrow it down to who you actually want to speak to. Now, this is where the area becomes a little bit greyer, because again, it depends on the type of the business and how the sale is going to go through. But what tends to happen at that point is you agree something called heads of terms with the would-be buyer. Now, heads of terms are a case of, right, we agree this is basically what the deal is, unless there are things that come out further down the line that change that deal. How things can change is, once you've got your heads of terms, is you go into a period of what's called due diligence. Can't say it today. Due diligence. And this is where the would-be buyer goes into real detail in your business. Absolutely forensic, way over the top of the information around them, looking at everything. What I have been told by the experts in this market is, a lot of the detail they go into is to cover the lawyers' bums and the accountants' bums. And more so with venture capitalists, but it is a case of satisfying the experts rather than necessarily the would-be buyers, but the would-be buyers have to rely on the experts. So they will go through massive detail in your business, and quite often they do that so they can chip you on the price. Because you might think that doesn't happen when you're buying a business. It happens when you're selling a house or a car. but it's more prevalent when you're selling a business. So somebody will go through it and say, okay, well, here's a weak link. Here's something we're concerned about. We want to adjust the price. And that's when it can start to get really, really painful. They talk about, I think it's death, marriages and divorce, the most stressful things you can experience. I've been through the sales process now. It's massively stressful. I know other people that have been through it, and it is really, really stressful. So it's not as romantic as you might think, that you just swan through this, somebody turns up, give you a check, and everything is lovely. It's hard, bloody work. So anyway, they've been through all the due diligence, and then you eventually you've agreed a price, and you've agreed a deal. And that's when it comes to actually going ahead with the deal. When you get to the point of doing the deal, the amount of documents you will have to sign will be like a book signing. When I went to the solicitor to do the signing, it was like a huge boardroom, and it was just full of documents. And the solicitor started with one and said, this is what this is. Okay, fine, I'll start signing that. This is what this is. Okay, right. And then by the fourth one, I just went, I don't care. Let's just get all these signed. So you get all these documents signed, and then you go into the period after that where you get your chunk of money, and then you can have your earn out where you're working for the business to hit set targets. It can be a consultant to get the money over a period of time. It could be you've had all of it up front. It can be various things. And that is pretty much where the process ends. At that process then, this is where I'm going to give the caveats where there's some more of the reasons why I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of selling businesses is certainly if you're on an earnout, you're not used to being a boss and you've got a boss. And that is going to be uncomfortable. If that particular boss is changing things with the business that you don't like, people start to leave, it's incredibly uncomfortable as well. So if you can secure an exit from the business such that you're not involved at that point, that is desirable. But fast forward into that, rather than give you a horror story of how that could turn out, it obviously it's on case by case. But there's also something that I think is very relevant to the people that have this idea of selling a business and sailing off into the sunset and retiring. I can speak from personal experience that after I sold my business, I went into depression for about 3 months. And the reason for that is obviously I had a reason for being. I had the ego and the chemicals that go with running a business for being, you know, when you walk into the room, people are looking at you because you own the business, the funniest guy in the room, you know, you're busy all the time. It's who you are. You're a successful business owner. And as much as I like to think I'm a humble person, it's nice to feel important. You can't deny it's not nice to feel important. So when I sold the business, I literally signed all the documentation, went to the office, packed up my box and left. And that was it. It was gone. Went on holiday, came back a couple of 3 weeks, loved it. And then suddenly it dawned on me, Monday's like Sunday. Now, it didn't help the fact that I'd train a lot. I had an Achilles injury that meant I couldn't train. I had an elbow injury that meant I couldn't train, so I couldn't do any training. And I didn't effectively have a job. And I didn't want to develop a drinking habit and all that stuff. So, but joking apart, the chemical drop that I had from being feeling important because I was a businessman, being in an office, interacting with people, just to working from home, doing a bit of non-exec work was a big drop. Now, I'm not getting the violin out and saying, oh, I suffered mental health with that. It's very, very common. I've spoken to a number of people that sold the business, and it is that, okay, I'm going to sell a business, I'm going to move to the countryside, I'm going to do lots of walks and get fit and go on holidays and all that kind of stuff. The problem is if you built a business to sell, you're a very highly driven individual. So that means you're used to being busy. It means you're used to making decisions. It means you're used to being important. And then suddenly you're not. Okay, and that is a big change you've got to get used to. Now, the way I could describe it is if you are driving 100 miles an hour, you're screeching to a halt of nothing like that. Okay, there's more sensible ways is if you're easing out of a job rather than necessarily going from 100 miles an hour to nothing. I can't say that that is the case with everybody. Some people, I'm sure, have sold the businesses, gone to live in the south of France, have been happy as a pig in poop. I do know two individuals, actually, that sold the businesses, and that's what they did. Not necessarily moved to France, but basically went on holiday for the rest of their lives. And they loved it. So it's not the same for everybody. But what I would say is selling your business is maybe not as glamorous as you might think. It's a lot harder work than you might think. I'm not trying to put people off. As I say, I personally don't advocate selling businesses because my thought process is if you've got a business that somebody wants to buy, then it's not going to fall apart. It's recurring revenue. You're going to get 4 times profit if it's per. maybe 10 times, 8 times profit if it's contract, something in between if it's both. But if you've got a strong management team, then why not give them some equity and tie them in so they can run it? So then you've got a cash cow going forward and they may have more energy, better ideas than you. You can stand as a CEO. So therefore, you've still got some involvement in the business. You've still got that ego thing going on, which we all have. You know, it's difficult to switch that off. You've then got the activity for your brain, you know, because you still involve the business to a degree. So that for me is a preferred option. But as I said earlier on, what I do with the businesses that I work with, we build them as if we are going to sell them. So if we do want to sell them, we can sell them. But that structure that a would-be buyer wants, the constituent parts of a would-be buyer wants, low staff attrition, your client spread out, good financial accounting, great branding, strong management team, all those great things. These are the things you need in a successful business. So you build it as if you're going to sell it, because that's a wise thing to do. This particular podcast is explaining actually what you do if you're going to sell it, because it's not quite as simple as people might think. And like I said, there's a lot of people who sold businesses and have been happy and done that. I sold a business because I basically fell out of love with my job. I can also understand people that want to build a business to sell it because it's a sense of achievement. Now, there's various different reasons. But what I've also found is the vast majority of people that sell businesses, not long after, start doing it again. Now, there's nothing wrong with selling the business to then obviously do it again. But what I would say is don't think that it is as seamless and as romantic as the sort of thing that you might envisage. So I hope that helps if you're thinking of selling your business. I hope it's not too negative, because I'm a very positive person, but there's no other way I can paint the sales process and taking a business to sale than the reality that it is. I think also your disposition affects how it affects you as to whether you're a type of person that enjoys that kind of thing. And like I say, it is quite stressful. It's more the bit at the end where once you've sold the business, what do you do next? So clearly, if you can plan some sort of exit post-sale that isn't necessarily just sitting in the sun, if it is going to non-exec, maybe doing charitable work, maybe getting involved with some smaller business. What I do now, I help startups. So what I do is I back recruiters and help them build their own businesses. And quite frankly, I've never been happier than I was in my own recruitment business. But it took me a few months to realize that's what I wanted to do. So that's something maybe to think of as well. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. As I always say with the podcast, if you're on YouTube, then like it, follow the page, leave nice comments, the same if it's an audio download. And if you do want to get any of my new content, any of my new blogs, new video podcasts or podcasts first, send me your email address. Go on our mailing list. We don't do any spam or anything like that. And you'll get them first. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this. See you soon.